Thing about the samsara or the universe is that urdhvamulam, it has its root which are above, meaning that even though the samsara or the world of names and forms, as we say, is constantly changing, its root or its essence, its truth is changeless. Urdhvam parma, the absolute reality. So the life that we are living and the world that we come across is all relative reality. However, its cause is absolute reality. Meaning that I am a limited being. However, this says that urdhvam mulam, my mulam, my cause, myself is urdhvam. Myself or nature is limitless. So even though I experience myself as a limited being, my true nature is limitlessness. Even though we experience the universe also as limited, constantly changing, still its truth is limitless. Adhashakam, the branches are below. Branches are what we perceive. The root is what we do not perceive. So what we do not perceive, the cause or the essence is limitless. What we perceive, our own self, as well as the universe, is all limited. So this is how Vedanta explains creation from the limitless to the limited, from the one to the many. When the cause is one, like clay is one and the parts are many, it's not that the clay becomes many but the clay appears as many parts. Similarly also, one truth of the reality appears as this manifold universe. Talking about that universe, the third verse says, Narupamasyeha tathopalabhyate nanto na chadihi nechasam pratishtha. If you examine and analyze this tree of samsara, this universe, our life, Rupam Asyaha, its rupam, its form, is not available for perception as described. Meaning that you cannot determine anything to be such and such, that this is what it is and it is this alone and not something else, we cannot say that about anything in this creation. Rupam, I mean, this cloth, for example, you cannot say with determination what it is. From one standpoint, this is cloth. From another standpoint, it is cotton. Yet from another standpoint, it may be yarn. From yet another fourth standpoint, it may be fibers. Meaning that whatever is all a standpoint. So, whatever kind of designation we give to something, whatever understanding we arrive at of anything is only a standpoint. There's nothing absolute about this. Nothing universal about this. There is no universal opinion about anything. Everybody has their own perception, therefore, everybody has their own opinion about what a given thing is. Nantaha nacha adihi. There is no adi meaning, there is no beginning of this universe. Nobody can say when it began. It is only an anadi parampara. From the time beginningless, it is just going on. Like what they call the bijankura nyaya, or the rule of bija and ankura, the seed and the sprout. Nobody can say whether the seed is first or the sprout is second. Because seed cannot be unless the sprout is. Sprout cannot be unless the seed is. That being the case, which is first? We say seed is first, then how did the seed come into being without a sprout? If the sprout is first, how did a sprout come into being without a seed? Thus, if you stretch this sequence of sprout to seed to sprout to seed, you cannot reach anywhere, meaning that you cannot arrive at a beginning. That no, Swamiji, first there was a seed. You say that, then the question is, how did this seed come into being? Therefore, everything being standpoint, everything being relative, therefore, you cannot arrive at the beginning of anything. So we say that we cannot determine the beginning of anything. When did this cloth come into being? You can say, Swamiji, it was manufactured 7 months ago. But it's not that the cloth did not exist at all. Before it was a form of the cloth, it was a form of the yarn. Swamiji, the yarn was made 9 months before that. But before it came into being in form of yarn, it was cotton. Before it was fibers, and so on and so forth. There's always something. Something cannot come from nothing and ever. The cause is always there before the effect can come. The cause must always be there before the effect can emerge. The universe being in effect, it must have a cause. However, what we find is that every cause is an effect also. So here, the cloth is the effect and the cotton is the cloth, the cause. But then cotton itself is in effect, the fibers are the cause, the fibers are the effect, the molecules are the cause. So every cause also is in effect. And that's the reason why we cannot determine when the thing began. There is no such thing as beginning. Meaning that Vedantins do not accept something called beginning. If you accept beginning, then there are so many problems. Because if there was the seed first, then why was the seed like this? You know, that question would arise. You say, here we talked about the parampara, this whole sequence of karma and karma phala. So this body is the result of the karma or the actions performed in the past. How come I perform action in the past? Because I had a body at that time. How did you have the body at that time? Because of the karma performed in the earlier one. How did you perform karma in the earlier birth? Because of the body at that time. In this manner also, if you stretch the sequence of the karma, karma phala, it is beginningless. People get frustrated with this. But Vedantins do not get frustrated. Vedantins say that one cannot answer something as such and such, it is good because it is mithya. That means that it is not real. And this mithyatvam should give us a great comfort, really. Just as the universe is not real, understand that our sense of limitedness also is not real, and therefore our sorrow, our samsara, the individual samsara, the sorrow is also not real. Meaning that there is no real cause for my being sad or unhappy. In discussion of all of this discussion, our primary concern is how to deal with me, myself. Meaning how to deal with my life, how to deal with my unhappiness. If you remove unhappiness from my life, I have no problem, I will be very happy. If you remove unhappiness, I will be happy. I mean, that's natural, you know. So, because happiness being the nature, all that you need to do is to remove unhappiness. And samsara means unhappiness. So this verse says that there is no beginning, there is no middle, there is no end, meaning that you cannot say it is such and such, meaning that unhappiness cannot be defined. What causes unhappiness? You cannot say, Swamiji, I lost my job. Some people are happy, thank God, you know. So there are people, so thank God, okay. I'm going to die. Some people are happy with that. Swami's body has become very old. It's good if Ishwar takes it away. There's no rule that a given phenomenon or a given event would necessarily make a person happy or unhappy. There's no rule at all. It's a certain point, how you look at it. Therefore, sorrow also is a result of a standpoint. Unhappiness also is a result of a standpoint. There is no absolute cause of unhappiness. No absolute cause. Because if that was so, that should make everybody unhappy. If losing a job is the cause of unhappiness, then somebody, I lost a job, so somebody got the job. That fellow is happy anyway. I lost, somebody made a profit, then therefore, what makes a given what event that makes a person unhappy, the very same event can make another person happy also. So what is the cause of unhappiness? Birth? You can't say. Death? You cannot say. Success? You cannot say. Failure? You cannot say. Success being a standpoint, failure being a standpoint, therefore what I consider as failure, it is likely that somebody else may consider it a success. One of the saints in Gujarat, his statement is very famous. His wife passed away. Now that should cause sorrow to anybody. Not that he was insensitive, but he says, Bhalu thayu bhagi janja, sukhe bhajishu shri gopa. He says, Bhalu thayu. That's good. That all this samsara is gone now. I have all the time now to worship Bhagwan, you know, he says. It's a standpoint. Of course, he has lost his wife. But then at the same time, that gives him now a lot of time. And what he ever wanted to do was to worship the Lord. A lot of his time and energy was expended in taking care of his wife and doing whatever was required. He's gone. So this is very important. Samsara is mithya, which means that there is no valid reason for unhappiness in our life. If we analyze unhappiness, the cause of unhappiness, we find that it is a given standpoint that makes the person unhappy. As Swami says, this person is waiting for the divorce to take place with his wife. His neighbor also is waiting for the same divorce to take place because so he can marry this woman. So is this woman the cause of unhappiness to one? Same way is cause of happiness to somebody else? No, Swami, I am hurt, I am insulted. Now that also is a standpoint. It's I who grant a given thing is an insult. I who brand a given thing as a failure. This is all my branding. But Swami, everybody does that. That's all right. Everybody does that. It's all branding and then suffering. Branding and then becoming happy also. I choose to brand something as success and then I congratulate myself and I become happy. But this fellow who congratulated himself will also blame himself when something else happens and he'll be unhappy. So what Lord Krishna means to say in this discussion of the tree of samsara is that samsara is mithya. To say that the world is mithya may be a little difficult thing, but then one thing we can say is all suffering is mithya, meaning that there is no valid cause of suffering. That's where we are interested in. Our interest in Vedanta is in all the technicalities are okay, but we are interested in living our life. And we want to live happily. And we don't want sorrow. We want to become free from sorrow or sadness. That's our primary agenda. What else? If you're not unhappy, then who would come to Vedanta also? Everybody comes here because they want to solve some problems. They want to deal with their life. And everybody has tried many ways of dealing with, not finding a way there, then they think that let's see if this has some way. And Vedanta says, very simple solution Vedanta gives, that there is no problem at all. There is no cause of sadness, no cause of unhappiness. Just change the standpoint. That's all. Like this sadhu, when sannyasi is walking with his long hair, he is walking in one direction and the wind is coming and blowing his hair on his face so he cannot see. He just turned the direction and started walking the other way around. Sometimes things can be as simple as that. We take things so seriously and we get so bogged down to things. Narupamasyeh tathopalabhyade nanto nachadir nacha sampradishtha. If this is the case, then it's very easy to cut this tree of samsara. See, the other day, the tree is called vruksha in Sanskrit, and the word vruksha is derived from vrashcha. Vrasht. Chedane. That which can be felled. Tree is that which can be felled, which can be cut asunder, is called tree. Ashvatthamenam suvirudhamunam. However, on account of giving reality to things. That what I see is real. It is tangible. Even the physicists also tell us that there is no tangible thing at all. All the tangible matter is nothing but the waves of energy. That's all it is. And so, it depends on how you look at this thing. The walls also will not remain walls. And this tangible solid shapes will not remain solid if the observer changes his speed. So when I observe these things around me, there are very solid and tangible shapes, lines are there. But if I ride a rocket which is running at very high speed, I'll find that as the speed of the observer increases slowly, all the shapes start melting away. And if my speed becomes the speed of light, there will be no form left at all. Which means that even the tangible forms that we perceive also are a standpoint. So it's a standpoint. The reason why I'm unhappy, because I choose to look at things from a certain standpoint. It's a standpoint, meaning it is relative. With this understanding, Ashvatthamenam suvirudhamulam. What an account of giving reality. This ashvattham, this tree, has become what? As suvirudhamulam. Its roots have become very firm. The whole thing is hanging. Somebody was giving an example. Swami, can you have a tree in which the roots are above and branches are below? Somebody gave a very clever idea. Reply says, yes. There can be a tree with branches below and roots above. You know what tree it is? It is a tree, the reflection of the tree that you see in water. You know, the branches are going down, roots are... means mithya. You know, know, so then roots are going down and roots are coming up, just as a reflected tea is not real. We have to contemplate upon the mithyatvam, that's all. Very important. Contemplate upon, then lot of things will just drop off. On account of giving reality to what we perceive and what we feel, that I am a limited being, I am a helpless, helpless creature, I am inadequate, all the time looking upon myself in this manner has made me so unhappy. As we have said a number of times, it is not that anybody else makes me unhappy, it is I who make myself unhappy. When do I become unhappy? Whenever I perceive myself as an inadequate being, incapable person. Inadequate, incapable, limited, helpless. In what someone does, or what a given event does, is simply, it triggers. All these notions are buried in my heart, and they trigger. And when this notion, I'm inadequate, comes up, I'm helpless. So anybody makes me feel helpless. It is my helplessness that makes me unhappy. But since that person has caused it, I blame that person for making me unhappy. You say something to me, it's up to me how to interpret that. As Gautam Buddha told his disciple, so once a disciple came and complained to Gautam Buddha, said that, oh revered sir, yesterday when I went to certain community for begging bhiksha, those people said all kinds of words to me, they insulted me. I'm very upset. Then Gautam Buddha says, okay my son, let's do this. To make him happy, Gautam Buddha said, here is my kamandalu, my water pot, my begging wall, I'm giving it to you, take it. So the fellow will be, you know, he says, okay, I got something very, you know, from my guru, something very valuable. But he had a lot of reverence for the guru. He says, no, no, sir, I cannot take it. But I'm giving you. Come on, take this kamandalu, take this water pot. No, no, sir, it is yours. I cannot take it. All right. So who does this kamandalu, who does the water pot belong to? Sir, it belongs to you. But I was giving it, but I did not accept it. If I accepted it, it would have belonged to me. I did not accept it, so it belongs to you. Similarly also, all those things that those people told you, all the bad words, anything that they say to you, if you accepted it, they come belong to you. If you don't accept it, they don't belong to you. In our Swami's words, a two-step response, always. A two-step response, not one-step response. One step is, you tell me something, then you are stupid. Right away I conclude I am stupid, and then I feel miserable. It's stupid. A two-step response. I step back and say, okay, that person says I am stupid. It is that person's opinion. I do not have to make it my opinion. Then I can remain where I am. This, the whole of Vedanta's very primary teaching is that the samsara, and forget about samsara meaning the world, our samsara, the personal samsara, our sorrow, our unhappiness, all of these, our grief, in fact is mithya, meaning there is no valid cause of that. It is I who choose to make myself unhappy. I have all the freedom not to do that. That is where the free will comes into play. I don't have any control over what anybody else does and says. I have no control over that. But how I respond to that, I certainly have a control. And I respond by creating a distance and not, you know, not superimposing upon myself. Ashvatthamenam sviruhamulam. On account of giving reality. On account of giving reality to my sense of smallness, on account of giving reality to my sense of inadequacy, and then constantly trying to become adequate. The inadequate I am, I have to become adequate unhappy I am, I have to become happy. That effort has been going on from the time beginningless. And that desire to become free from unhappiness naturally creates action. Actions create the result. Results create further reaction. They create further desires. And this is how this chain is going on from time beginningless, to such an extent that this idea in my mind, that I'm inadequate, that idea is so deeply rooted, because every time I get disappointed, that idea becomes confirmed. I knew that. I knew. I'm no good. That I am no good, that I am inadequate, somehow that idea alone gets confirmed. Even to what we consider a most successful person also, as far as that person's own perception of his own self is concerned, I don't think that that person thinks very highly of himself, because even though he's successful, he's still trying for more success. Why is it so? Because he's not happy with this amount of success that he has. A wealthy person tries for more wealth. Why? Because he is not quite content with the wealth that he has. And nothing can make me content. Na vittena tarpaniyo manushyah, says Nachiketa. A manushya, human being, can never be satisfied by any kind of, any vitta, any wealth, and name, fame. Nothing can satisfy me. And I am seeking satisfaction from that which cannot satisfy me. I am seeking security from that which cannot give me security. Therefore, my efforts are bound to be frustrated. Even though momentarily it looks like I am successful and I am now secure, and then I discover something else, I am as insecure as before, I try again, something else promises to make me secure. Everything turns out to be hollow ultimately, because that's what it is. As we say a number of times, Ishvara has created this world not for security or happiness. He has created the world to satisfy my basic needs of hunger and thirst and protection from heat and cold and rain. And that is the purpose of this world. It is not meant to give me happiness or security. That I have to discover from myself. But what is within myself, I am constantly seeking to discover from outside of myself. My efforts cannot be successful. But then, the lack of success or effort does not change my view. My view becomes more confirmed. I knew that I am a failure. I knew that I am no good. In fact, that perception of myself, that false notion, becomes more and more confirmed. Ashvatthameram suirudhamulam. This ashvattha, the tree of samsara, or the people tree, has become, with its roots, has become very firm. Here, these roots are well entrenched. So this is called well entrenchment of the roots, understand? There is no such tree, therefore there are no such roots, but these are the roots. Whatever be the nature of roots is the nature of tree. So here Lord Krishna talks about two kinds of roots, understand? One root is Ishvara Paramatma, which is absolute root. Other root is ignorance. There are two roots of this tree. One root or one cause, one reality about the samsara, including about myself, is Brahman, the limitless. The other root or the cause of myself, meaning my sense of limitation, is ignorance. Ignorance is beginningless. And therefore, this constant effort on my part to become free, become happy, is also beginningless. And as much as I have superimposed upon myself this sense of unhappiness, I have equally superimposed this happiness called Shobhanadhyasa. Shobhanadhyasa means Ramaniyata Adhyaropa. Meaning, superimposing upon this object much more value than it possesses. So, money or wealth definitely has a value in our life. To say that money has no value is wrong. It's subjectivity. To say money is everything is also another subjectivity. To say that wealth is everything is also a subjectivity. Wealth is nothing is also a subjectivity. It has certain value. If I assign that value that belongs to it, it is okay. But if I say it is everything, then I am bound to be disappointed because it cannot give me what it does not possess. In this manner, the ignorance and the sense of limitation that ignorance brings about, and that sense of limitation brings about the desire to become free from limitedness, that brings about an action that brings about a result which is bound to be disappointment today or tomorrow. But that disappointment creates further desire, further action. Sumi rudhamulam asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. Cut off this root of ignorance, understand? You cannot cut off the root that is Brahman. So two roots, how can it is, it's not two roots. Brahman with ignorance becomes a root. The Brahman part is real, the ignorance part is unreal. So what we are told is Ashvatthamenam Suvirudhamulam, this ignorance, sense of limitedness, and actions, results, likes, dislikes. This is the, these roots have become very deeply, well entrenched. Chitva, cut those roots. Asanga shastrena, by the shastra, by the weapon, that by the acts of asanga, of detachment, by the firm weapon of detachment. What is detachment? Detachment is opposite of attachment. That's called detachment. So what this thing does, what my sense of limitedness, as I said, there are two kinds of superimpositions here. One is the superimposition on myself, when I look upon myself as a limited, inadequate, unhappy being. This is the superimposition upon myself. And Shobhana, there's a superimposition upon the world, that the world will give me happiness. World includes everything other than myself. Gives me, including this body, gives me happiness and security and well-being. It is this primary notion which is what is keeping the samsara going. Examine this notion. Am I truly insecure? Is insecure? Is unhappiness? Is inadequacy? Is it my true nature? Can it be my true nature? If inadequacy were my true nature, if being limited was my true nature, understand that I would be comfortable being limited. See this. Everything is comfortable with being what it is. Fire has no complaint being hot. Ice has no complaint being cold. Water has no complaint in flowing from a higher level to a lower level. It will resist when we want it to go in the opposite direction. Water will resist if you heat it up. It will want to cool down. Meaning that everything is comfortable being what it truly is. If I am not comfortable being limited, that means that limitedness cannot be my nature. If limitedness was my nature, I would be happy being limited. If inadequacy, limitedness, helplessness, which I feel about myself, if that was my nature, I would be happy being helpless. I am not. That shows that it cannot be my nature. I cannot possibly be what I take myself to be. So this is how our notions have to be analyzed. These notions cause attachment. That I am inadequate, therefore, causes me an attachment or dependence upon something that I look upon as a source of adequacy or happiness. When I brand myself unhappy, then naturally there is an attachment towards something which I look upon as source of happiness. As we said, so money becomes very important to me because I look upon money as a means of happiness, which is not the case. Money is definitely useful in our life. We cannot do without money, generally speaking. At least in the United States, we cannot do without money. In India, perhaps we may. In a sense that you can be a beggar or you can be a wandering monk and you can beg your food and, you know, the weather being such that you can lie, you can sleep under a tree. It's all possible there. Here is impossible. So money is useful, but to say that money gives me happiness and security, that is wrong understanding about money. So both these kind of notions, we have to subject them to scrutiny. The notions I entertain about myself, as well as notions I entertain about the world, are they real? If there was security in money, then once I get my $1,000,000, I should be happy forever, should be satisfied with it. The moment I become a millionaire, right away I want to become a multi-millionaire, because even a millionaire also doesn't seem to be satisfied with what he has. You can be satisfied being a millionaire. I'm not saying every millionaire is dissatisfied. I'm saying that a million cannot satisfy me, that's all. So if I am seeking my satisfaction from $1,000,000, that cannot, because once I get $1,000,000, the next impulse will be to become multi-millionaire. So we would analyze these things. Asanga shastrena, sanga is attachment. Attachment meaning this false notion that comes on account of not thinking or not scrutinizing our conclusions in life. We have conclusions about our own self, we have conclusions about everything else in the world. And those false, wrong conclusions have caused attachment, dependence, that's caused sangha. So I'm dependent upon my, a person is dependent upon the spouse and children and his friends and the society and his wealth, his name and form. A person is attached, meaning that he looks upon these as source of security. Then what will I be without them? This was one of Arjuna's questions also. What will I be without all my near and dear ones? What will I be? A sense of insecurity without them? So these notions have to be subject. This is called viveka. Viveka means discrimination, meaning discernment, meaning understanding the true nature of things. So Lord Krishna says, asanga shastrena. This attachment or dependence upon the family, upon the possessions, upon many other things that have evolved over a period of time on account of not scrutinizing my conclusions about those things, therefore those conclusions have become more rooted. My conclusion about myself and my conclusion of the world have become very well rooted. And we cannot expect them to go away by themselves, because in fact they keep on growing. So the second root also can expanding. Asanga shastra. Therefore by the shastra of viveka. Viveka means discerning, discriminating, looking into the true nature of things. And for that, of course, we may need scriptures. We may need the teacher also. We may not be capable of doing it on our own. Had we been doing it, then of course we would not be, the unhappy self that we are. And that's the reason why Lord Krishna begins the 15th chapter with a description of tree of samsara, because what we require, Lord Krishna presents viveka, so vairagya arises, which vairagya is a very necessary requirement of the for pursuing knowledge. Asanga shastrena. It's called viveka, it means called vairagya. Asanga means vairagya. Sanga means raga. Asanga means viraga. Instead of viraga, it's vairagya. So vairagya, dispassion or detachment, is the shastra, is the X with which this tree of samsara has to be cut asunder. So viveka and vairagya. What happens is that our intellectual understanding is not enough. Our mind goes back again and again. This is aviveka, meaning that non-discrimination, this wrong understanding is at all the levels in our personality. It has seeped into entire personality. The third chapter Lord Krishna said, where is this kama? Where is this attachment? Where is this craving? Indriyani manobuddhi astya dhishthana mucchare. In the intellect, so intellect has the wrong notions. So intellect having the wrong notions, that is how the aviveka or attachment is rooted in intellect. And on account of entertaining wrong notions for a period of time, then mind has started behaving. So intellect is a thinking faculty, mind is a behaving faculty. All our behavior takes place at the level of mind. All our interaction takes place at the level of mind. So if you train your dog to act in a certain way, then that habit can be created, the dog will act like that. So intellect has trained his mind also. By all the time entertaining certain notions, those notions will become also rooted in the mind. So mind, which is what we call the habitual faculty. So habitually it has all the attachments. Does anyone think? So it is not that we have to think. Mind is not a thinking faculty. It is only a habitual faculty. Meaning that aviveka or attachment has become habit. It has come down to the sense organs, the most outer layer of our personality, in that it is in terms of various urges. This urge, when I eat my food which is salty, there is an urge from somewhere to eat something sweet, an urge. That nobody is involved, intellect is not involved, mind also is not involved. My palate says, hey, you should have something sweet. My eyes say, hey, you should see something green. Eyes tell me, you should see something beautiful. My ears tell me, you should hear something that is, you know, musical, something sweet, something pleasant. This seeking pleasure has become an impulse, that urge, even at the level of sense organs. So all the three levels, this attachment has spread. That's a suvirudamulam. Attachment has spread at all the levels of personality. You have to remove it from all the levels. Therefore, shama, shamadi, shatka, sambhati, shama, dama, uparama. So, viveka and vairagya. Vedantic students are all familiar with the terms. Viveka is analyzing, discerning, understanding, discriminating, as we say. That the notions I am emanating about myself, are they valid? And the notions I am entertaining about the world, are they valid? You find that they are not valid. I have never subjected them to the scrutiny of inquiry, and therefore they are perpetuating. As the example is given of an imposter. An imposter persists as long as you do not inquire. So in an occasion of a wedding in a village in India, this person came in a suit and boot and tie and went to the groom side, bride and groom side, posing the representative of the bride. So those people, you know, honored him, and then, you know, he says, I want this, I want that, all his desires are fulfilled. And the same fellow goes to the bride side also, and poses as a representative of the groom, and then he makes other demands. Thus he keeps making demands from both the sides. And both the sides are fed up with him. And so, the father of the groom and father of the bride, both of them, once they meet with each other to find out who this fellow is. Is this a friend of your son? That's what the bride's father wants to know. I thought he was the friend of your daughter. So this fellow is there and he sees that both these people are not talking about me, inquiring about me, right away disappears. Because he doesn't belong in either party. He's just posing. Similarly, the samsara is just posing. All of these attachments are posing. All the conclusions are posing As long as we do not subject these conclusions to the inquiry, so long the conclusions persist. And as if we do not subject them to inquiry, they will persist forever. So Viveka first starts at the intellectual level. And thus, this misunderstanding, wrong conclusions obtain at the level of intellect. The intellect thinks that I am unhappy and happiness is in the objects of the world. This is the conclusion. This is the considered opinion of the intellect. So that's where it begins. Now intellect understands. So now when we subject these conclusions to this kind of a scrutiny that we are doing this morning, then we understand this is right. You are right, Swamiji. If unhappiness was my nature, I would be happy being unhappy. You know? If sadness was my nature, I would be happy being sad. If being helpless is my nature, I would be happy being helpless, but I am not. It cannot be my nature. And if happiness was anywhere in the world, then I would be happy because I have so many things I have. I may not be a millionaire, but then I am something anyway. I have something. At least I have enough food to eat. I have enough things to, you know, at least sustain my life. And if those things were a source of happiness, I would be happy. That's not the case. So intellect understands and becomes disillusioned. This is called disillusionment. Intellect becomes disillusioned that so far what I thought was wrong. Now this viveka or this understanding of intellect must now be translated at the level of mind, the habitual faculty, because mind is trained to do certain things without thinking. Now you have to undo those things. So even though the intellect understands, still that understanding has to be translated at the level of mind. This is called shama. In Vedanta, this is called shama. Shama means tranquility of the mind. So this is a very common question. Swami, I understand everything, but still somehow it doesn't seem to help me. For many complaints are made about our students. Swamiji, you know, all these people, your students are listening to Vedanta for so many years. Complaints. I told you that story of Swami Chinmayananda, you know, that he was giving talks in Bombay in a very large ground, Sardar Patel Stadium, you know, thousands of people listening to him. And when someday somebody complained to Swamiji, says, look at your disciples all sitting in the front row and listening to you for years together and understanding what all you are saying and enjoying what all you are saying. But Swamiji, do you know how they behave? As soon as they come out of the stadium, they come to a bus stop. You know how they behave? So Swamiji, in his typical style, replies this question by a story. He says, one Sunday morning, this man is sitting and enjoying his newspaper. And he has an urge to have a cup of coffee. So he calls his wife, hey, may I have a cup of coffee, please? Please, miss, they don't say in India, but I'm just saying it. That's a culture. That is his right, you know. So after a few minutes, wife brings a cup of coffee. There is a saucer, there is a cup, there is a spoon. This fellow is engrossed reading his newspaper. So he sips the coffee. It's bitter. Another sip, bitter. And he starts shouting as usual. So what is it? Again, you have not put any sugar in the coffee. You know that I like coffee with sugar. This is very bitter. And thus he keeps shouting for a few minutes. His wife comes out. What's the matter? Again, same thing. You have not put sugar. You have forgotten sugar. He says, do you see that? There is a spoon there and the saucer. So yes. You know the purpose of spoon? It is for stirring the coffee. The sugar is at the bottom to stir it. So Swami Chinmayananda says, I give them all the sugar. They have to stir it. just as after eating the food you have to digest it. After Shravanam there is Mananam. So similarly this Vairagya, which is first at the level of understand the intellect, has to be assimilated and has to become a part of our day-to-day behavior. So now intellect has understanding, but the mind, because of impulses, comes up with different desires. I want this, I want that, because mind still thinks habitually that that's where the happiness is. So it wants that, it wants this. Then now intellect has to educate the mind. As Viveka Chudamani says, Virajya Vishaya Viratat Dosha Dushtya Muhur Muhu. Muhur Muhu again and again. Dosha Dushtya, by showing the mind the dosha, the defects, the blemishes, the disadvantages involved in enjoying a certain thing. Mind wants to enjoy. Not knowing that more I enjoy, more my impulse of enjoying grows. And that I need to become free from that impulse. So intellect says to educate the mind. Hey mind, look, there's no happiness there. See what happened last time, ate those bhajiya made of mirchi, you know. So they make this bhajiya with green chili. Green chili dipped and fried. It's very tasty in the beginning. At the end it is very difficult, you know, painful. So then the intellect has to educate the mind. Do you remember what happened? And Lord Krishna says, Vishayendra Sanyogat Yatadagri Amrutopamam Parinami Vishamiva. So what appears to be very delightful, very pleasurable in the beginning, turns out to be very bitter at the end. And therefore, all the previous experiences of deriving pleasure from sense objects must necessarily have resulted into a bitterness in terms of wanting more, being more dependent, being addicted. So mind is addicted to so many things. I'm not talking about drugs and things, but we are addicted also to food, we are addicted to many things. Whatever I cannot do without, I am addicted. Our addictions are growing. So look, you have become dependent, O mind. You are, you know, ultimately the capacity of that thing to give you happiness also is not there. Does happiness belong to that? If so, then it should always make you happy, etc., etc. So all those arguments you have to make with the mind and release the mind from its fascination for that object and bring it back. But mind being what it is like the tail of a dog. You try to straighten it, becomes curled again. So again mind goes, again you do that, again it goes, again, like our teenagers. You tell them, yes, but then I want it. All the arguments, so what is the disadvantage? Yeah, but I want it. Again you argue, it's, I want it, you know. So mind goes again and again, again and again. And very patiently we have to keep on educating the mind. And bringing the mind back from its preoccupation with the experiencing the pleasure. Making the mind see that it makes you dependent, it makes you addicted, and it don't, then happiness you'll get from them is really nothing but an appearance, not a reality. As Lord Krishna says, ye samsparshaya bhogaha dukha yone evate. All the pleasures that come by the association of sense organs, sense objects are nothing but a cause of a lot of unhappiness. You have to make the mind see. Make the mind see, not the cell, tell. Make the mind see how you become addicted, how you ultimately suffer. What defects are involved, what disadvantage are involved in all sensuous pleasure or pleasure of all the objects of the world. You have to make the mind see. Again and again and again. Muhur muhur. That is how that Vairagya now gets assimilated at the level of the mind. Assimilation. As the Swamiji says, the value of value. A value must be assimilated. With listening to the lecture from the teacher I understand that truthfulness is the right thing to do, but my habit of speaking untruth has to go. I should assimilate the value of truthfulness. Assimilate the value. So also, vairagya must be assimilated. That process called shama, meaning creating tranquility of the mind, which is releasing the mind from the hold of likes and dislikes, attachments and aversions. It's a process. It's a big sadhana. So that's why Lord Krishna said, asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. That axe must be hardened and sharpened. Drudhena asanga shastrena chitva. So on the on the stone of Viveka, that axe must be sharpened again and again, because when you hit the tree, it gets blunted. So you must sharpen again. Give a few strokes, gets blunted, sharpen again. Similarly also, the vairagya must be sharpened again and again. By rubbing it on the stone of Viveka. Meaning that the Viveka, which exists at the level of intellect, must be brought to play in every situation. And the mind must be made to see the defects involved there, the disadvantage of attachment involved there, and release that mind. Asanga sastrena drudhena chitva. And still sometimes mind says, I'm going to enjoy it, whatever you say. Even if there's disadvantage, I don't care. Sometimes it says, like this friend of mine, whose mother used to tell him, hey, you're beating your sister, you're beating her up, like the thorns in your hand. He says, let them be there, I'll beat her with the thorns, he says, So similarly, sometimes the mind is like that. I want it. Then we have to put our foot down. It's called damaha, meaning at the level of sense organs, I will control the sense organs. I will not say something. Even that urge to say something, to reply to somebody, to retaliate, I will control that urge. In my palate, there's an urge to put this in my mouth, I will control that urge. It's called damaha. So viveka, vairagya, shama, dama, all of them meant here. Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. This practice has to go on for as long as is required. Samaja, how long? As long as is required. Until uparati, when the mind becomes an abiding mind. So without effort, now the vairagya is assimilated at all the levels of a personality, in the intellect, in the mind, in the sense organs. In all the levels now, when vairagya, meaning that now all the urges of the sense organs are gone, all the wrong habits of mind are gone, all wrong habits of thinking of intellect are gone. That stage is called uparati. You see the advantages. As you withdraw your attention, as the detachment comes, there is a reward here, fortunately. If there is no reward, then who will want to do this? Says Lord Krishna, Vāśya sparśeṣu asaktātmā vindatyātmaniyat sukham sabrahma yoga yuktātmā sukham akṣayam aśnute. Vāśya sparśeṣu asaktātmā. The one whose mind has become asaktam, detached from, when there is a healthy detachment from the objects of enjoyment, then mind becomes inward-looking. The extent to which the mind is inward-looking, to that extent, it enjoys the inner peace, because the self is of the nature of peace and happiness. The extent to which the mind is released from its attachments or desires, to that extent, extrovertedness is less. To that extent, the inward introvertedness or inward lookingness comes. Mind becomes abiding inwardly. The extent to which the mind now remains with itself, to that extent, there is peace, there is happiness, which is the nature of self. The mind starts enjoying that. And therefore, its need to seek peace and happiness from outside automatically goes down. When the mind abides completely, because mind is discovered peace and happiness with itself. Ideal state. Uparati. Viveka vayaga shama dama uparati. Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. This is what one should do. As Shankaracharya says, that shantyadis parijyatam dhrutaram karmasu santyajyatam shantyadini parijyatam shamadama. All of these attributes one must in fact cultivate within oneself. And then next what? Sannyasa. Now you can give up everything else because everything has served a purpose now. All the activities, all the actions, the duties, the responsibilities, all the involvement in samsara, the purpose was for self-growth. So scriptures look upon our active life as a means of cultivating a contemplative mind. So this way, the mind becomes a contemplative mind. Not always a seeking mind, but a contemplative. As the mind inward looking becomes more and more contemplative. If you have discovered the joy of contemplation, if you have discovered the joy of studying the scriptures, of listening to them, on contemplating upon them, meaning that you can be now with yourself, then that is a stage where you have the freedom. You don't have to, but there is freedom now to give up all your other engagements and responsibilities and apply yourself totally to now the pursuit of knowledge, which is what Lord Krishna says in the fourth verse. So let us read the fourth verse. Tatah padam tat parimargitavyam yasmin gatana nivartanti bhuyah tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yatah pravritte prasruta purani. Tatah, thereafter. So for doing what follows thereafter, some preparation is required. Those preparations were described in the third verse. The viveka vairagya shamadi shatka sambatte shama dama uparama. Thereafter, tataha. So when you have been able to achieve that state of mind, thereafter, tat padam parimargitavyam, one must investigate into that padam, that abode, yasmin gataha na nivartanti bhuyah, having gone where they do not return, the wise people do not return the samsara. How do you do that? Tameva sadhyam purusham prapadye yatah pravrutti prasuta purani. Tameva cha adhyam purusham prapadye. I take refuge unto the primordial person from whom yatah pravrutti purani prasuta, from whom this beginningless samsara has evolved or emerged. To that person, to that primordial person, Ishvara, I take refuge into, I surrender into that. So it's also a beautiful verse where Lord Krishna tells us what is the goal and what's the means of achieving the goal. We'll discuss that in the next class.